Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play The Life and Death of Jack Straw. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio recording. It has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes, or cuts. So it's not perfect, and we may change the take and the text for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the full cast episode further up the podcast list. Seriously, this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. But if you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land. Welcome to the spoilers for Jack Straw, Act 3, Scene 3. As noted previously, the original text has no scene divisions, and it is possible to blur the lines between some of the action here. For this episode, Scene 3 encompasses the action following the exit of the Queen Mother. Tom Miller remains on stage, and the rebels all re-enter. Enter Jack Straw, Wat Tyler, Parson Ball, Nobbs. It says Nobbs is present, but I think that's an error. I think he's said he's done and he has exited. He definitely has no more dialogue, so I personally believe he is not here. But that's entirely down to the producer. Jack, as ever, gets the opening gambit.
The king and his nobles think they may sleep in quiet now they've given us a little holy water at the court. But there's no such matter. We be no such fools to be babbled out with words and after come to hanging.
Again with the hanging. Such great stuff here. Babbled out with words. Do love that. Anyway, Smith, make the announcement.
What? Do the thing thou comest for. If thou wilt be ruled by me, we'll not leave it so.
Rantara! Have it all, my boys.
Sayest thou so, my heart? Then farewell, my pardon. For I'll do as ye do. Hang together for company.
Tom Miller, is he really bricking it? You know, and the cries of the company steals him to stay on side. It's not a good call, has to be said. He's had chances to run. He's perfectly well informed, but he is staying.
Then farewell, my pardon. For I'll do as ye do. Hang together for company.
How much the comedy is bravado and how much of it is genuine, just simplicity. So there's more layers to Tom Miller, I think, than I've really discussed so far. That line, there are options. Now Parson Ball returns, after not having had much to do since Act 1, and he gets to call the field to order.
Neighbours and friends, never yield, but fight it lustily in the field. For God will give you strength and might and put your enemies to flight, to stand against them day and night, for of my honesty, your quarrel's right.
And just as at the top of the play, Tom Miller undermines the oratory of Parson Ball with this little ditty. Now, this could actually be a song. We haven't done it as such, but it could be. Second bit of text where we suspect it could be performed in a sing-song fashion.
Oh, Parson Ball, before you all. If all fall out not well, by following thy counsel, and that by listening to thy talk, to the gallows we do walk, Parson Bull, I will tell thee, and swear it of mine honesty, thou shalt be hanged as well as we.
Peace!
But enough of this silliness, though I suspect none of these words of Tom Miller gets a laugh, as it's pretty dark as hell. And we're back to Jack, pointing out that the king is coming.
Here comes the king, I trow.
And enter the king, Lord Mayor, and Newton bearing a sword. And this sword business is going to get fiddly. There's a lot of questions in my mind about how this sword stuff works. And how it works is dependent on how close are these actors together at any particular moment during this scene. How are they spaced? How wide is this stage? So let's say the king et al. Are one side, the rebels are another. There's enough of a span for this question by the king to be sensibly asked.
What company be those, Newton, we do see? Be they of those that promised us to part?
Newton replies, well, it looks like about half. Some have gone home, but this is something of an affront to the king, who is expecting more people to have left.
Even part of those, my good and gracious lord, that promised your highness to depart.
Why, then, I see they stand not to their words. And sure they should not break it so with me, that have so carefully remembered them. This is a part of great ingratitude.
These rebels, you just can't trust them. And then, putting this distrust further, the Lord Mayor chips in.
And, like your majesty, the Essex men, with far more better minds, have parted company, and every man betaken him to his home. The chiefest of these rebels be of Kent, of base degree, and worse conditions all, and vowed, as I am given to understand, to nothing but to havoc and to spoil.
Lord Mayor, if it be so, I wot it is a dangerous and unnatural resolution. I pray thee, Newton, go and speak with them. Ask them what more it is that they require.
Stage direction. Newton goes to the rebels. So he crosses the stage, maybe to a midpoint, and says,
My masters, you that be the chiefest of the rout, the king entreats you kindly here by me to come and speak with him a word or two.
Now, does anyone step forward to join him from the rebels' side at this point? Jack doesn't seem to be keen, so perhaps his line is said from a distance?
Sirrah, if the king would anything with us, tell him the way is indifferent to meet us.
You are too many to be talked with all. Besides, you owe a duty to your prince.
And now Jack throws down the gauntlet, taunting the goodwill of the parley. Give me a sword, mate. Perhaps stepping forward towards Newton, somewhere vaguely central.
Sirrah, give me the sword thou wearest there. Becomes it thee to be armed in my presence?
Sir, I wear my weapon for mine own defence. And by your leave, we'll wear it yet a while.
Now, no, Newton says, you cannot have my sword. Now, this doesn't go down well, and the king gets involved. Now, does he step forward to join Newton and Jack? Is this a distant shout?
What, wilt thou, villain? Give it me, I say.
Newton, give it him. If that be all the matter, here, take it. And what good do it thee?
So the stage direction says the king gives him the sword. Now, is it the king gives him? So, him. Is this the king gives his sword, the king's sword, the sword that the king is holding, to Newton? Or is he giving it to Jack? Is it his sword? Is the king giving Newton's sword to Jack? Or what? It's all a little unclear. Because nothing seems to have occurred, because Jack doesn't get the sword he wants at this point.
Villain, I say, give me the sword thou bearest up, for that's the thing I tell thee I affect.
So, did the king throw his sword, but Jack wanted Newton's sword? Or does Newton pick up the king's sword, having been thrown down for Jack, refusing to allow it to go to the rebel side because it seems like he won't give it up? Or are his next two lines a forced rearguard defence of his lost sword? How dare you take this sword? It belongs to the king.
This sword belongs unto my lord the king. 'Tis none of mine, nor shalt thou have the same.
But it seems very definite that it should not happen so. Anyway, it feels a bit fudged. So perhaps the stage direction was misplaced and that the sword gets passed across around about here. Or, well, there's a lot of ways this sequence could practically play out. Ideally, by this point, neither the king nor Newton have a sword and they are midst of the stage surrounded by a fair number of rebels. Or maybe just very close to Jack, who has a whacking great sword. So Newton, naturally, not the wisest of moves, taunts the rebels further.
Proud rebel, wert but thou and I alone,
thou durst not ask it thus boldly at my hand, for all the wealth this Smithfield doth contain.
By him that died for me, I will not die until I have seen thee hanged or made away!
So Newton has stepped a bit too far. He's in danger. The king in the next line has either not got to join Newton and says this line from afar, or he's running back from the centre, back to the Lord Mayor, asking for help. He could deliver this line from next to Newton, across to the Lord Mayor, but that feels a bit weird. So again, a whole series of potential placements rear their head.
Alas, Lord Mayor, Newton is in great danger, and force cannot prevail against the rout.
And finally, the Lord Mayor gets his chance, the chance to show his mettle that he's been waiting for all his life. This aside.
Old Rome, I can remember I have read, when thou didst flourish for virtue and for arms, what magnanimity did abide in thee. Then, Walworth, as it may become thee well, deserve some honour at thy prince's hand, and beautify this dignity of thine with some or other act of consequence.
So all that to the audience, but then as he advances on the villain Jack, pulling out his sword as he goes, because the Lord Mayor has a sword as well, his own sword that he's kept hidden.
Villain, I say, whence comes this rage of thine? How durst thou, a dunghill bastard born, to brave thy sovereign and his nobles thus? Villain, I do arrest thee in my prince's name. Proud rebel as thou art, drink that with all!
And here the stage direction says he stabs Jack. Here he stabs him.
Jack!
Learn thou and all posterity after thee what 'tis a servile slave to brave a king.
Bit of a moment as he now decides how to spin this act to the king, perhaps.
Pardon, my gracious lord. For this, my act is service done to God and to yourself.
And, well, the king can hardly complain.
Lord Mayor, for thy valiant act in this, and noble courage in the king's behalf, thou shalt beseech us not to be ungrateful.
With Jack dead, the rebels lose it, giving the king a chance to rally his people.
Our captain is slain!
Fear you not, people, for I am your king, and I will be your captain and your friend.
Now, Newton has two ways to say the next two lines. Either he says to the king,
pleaseth your grace for you to withdraw yourself? These rebels then will soon be put to foil.
Both lines together. Or he says the first line,
pleaseth your grace for you to withdraw yourself?
To the king, and then to the audience, or other people on stage,
these rebels then will soon be put to foil.
Basically, it's a question of how complicit is the play in making the king in what is to follow. Does the king approve of killing lots of rebels? Or is he being isolated for plausible deniability? Because everyone, except the mayor and two sergeants, now exit, leaving the mayor to lead the charge against the rebels, which he's been itching to do all act.
Soldiers, take heart to you and follow me. It is our God that gives the victory! Drag this accursed villain through the streets to strike a terror to the rebels' hearts. London will give you power and arms, and God will strengthen you and daunt your foes. Fill Smithfield full of noise and joyful cries, and say aloud, God save our noble prince!
And off they jolly well go to do some killing. And thus ends Act 3. Act 4 is one scene of, shall we say, the management of the narrative. And it's a really interesting scene. If you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of this scene, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, or if I'm in plain demonstrable error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your suggestions. Email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org or give us a buzz on Twitter @beyondshakes. Or you can support our work by becoming a patron. Patrons get to vote for the plays we work on next. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and get involved. But that's it from this spoiler episode. The full cast Super Deluxe edit will be coming anon. But till then, here's the plain text of Act 3, Scene 3 of The Life and Death of Jack Straw. Performed by Polly Hall as Jack Straw, Lee MacDonald as Wat Tyler, Rob Meissen as Parson Ball, Hugh Wellapooley as Tom Miller, Hayden McCabe as Sir John Newton, Simon Nader as the Lord Mayor, and Nemone Stone as Richard II. And I've been your host, Robert Crichton.
The king and his nobles think they may sleep in quiet now they've given us a little holy water at the court, but there's no such matter. We be no such fools to be babbled out with words and after come to hanging. What? Do the thing thou comest for. If thou wilt be ruled by me, we'll not leave it so.
Rantara! Have it all, my boys!
Sayest thou so, my heart? Then farewell, my pardon, for I'll do as ye do. Hang together for company.
Neighbours and friends never yield, but fight it lustily in the field. For God will give you strength and might and put your enemies to flight to stand against them day and night. For of my honesty, your quarrel's right.
Oh, Parson Ball, before you all, if all fall out not well, by following thy counsel, and that by listening to thy talk, to the gallows we do walk, Parson Bull, I will tell thee, and swear it of mine honesty, thou shalt be hanged as well as we.
Peace! Here comes the king, I trow.
What company be those, Newton, we do see? Be they of those that promised us to part?
Even part of those, my good and gracious lord, that promised your highness to depart.
Why, then, I see they stand not to their words, and sure they should not break it so with me, that have so carefully remembered them. This is a part of great ingratitude.
And, like your majesty, the Essex men, with far more better minds, have parted company, and every man betain him to his home. The chiefest of these rebels be of Kent, of base degree, and worse conditions all, and vowed, as I am given to understand, to nothing but to havoc and to spoil.
Lord Mayor, if it be so, I wot it is a dangerous and unnatural resolution. I pray thee, Newton, go and speak with them. Ask them what more it is that they require.
My masters, you that be the chiefest of the rout, the king entreats you kindly here by me to come and speak with him a word or two.
Sirrah? If the king would anything with us, tell him the way is indifferent to meet us.
You are too many to be talked with all. Besides, you owe a duty to your prince.
Sirrah, give me the sword thou wearest there. Becomes it thee to be armed in my presence?
Sir, I wear my weapon for mine own defence, and by your leave will wear it yet a while.
What, wilt thou, villain? Give it me, I say.
Newton, give it him. If that be all the matter, here, take it, and much good do it thee.
Villain, I say, give me the sword thou bearest up, for that's the thing I tell thee I affect.
This sword belongs unto my lord the king. 'Tis none of mine, nor shalt thou have the same. Proud rebel, wert but thou and I alone, thou durst not ask it thus boldly at my hand, for all the wealth this Smithfield doth contain.
By him that died for me, I will not die until I have seen thee hanged or made away.
Alas, Lord Mayor, Newton is in great danger, and force cannot prevail against the rout.
Old Rome, I can remember I have read, when thou didst flourish for virtue, and for arms, what magnanimity did abide in thee. Then, Walworth, as it may become thee well, deserve some honour at thy prince's hand, and beautify this dignity of thine with some or other act of consequence. Villain, I say, whence comes this rage of thine? How durst thou, a dunghill bastard, born to brave thy sovereign and his nobles thus? Villain! I do arrest thee in my prince's name, proud rebel as thou art. Drink that with all!
Oh, Jack.
Learn thou, and all posterity after thee, what 'tis a servile slave to brave a king. Pardon, my gracious lord, for this my act is service done to God and to yourself.
Lord Mayor, for thy valiant act in this, and noble courage in the king's behalf, thou shalt beseech us not to be ungrateful.
Our captain is slain!
Fear you not, people, for I am your king, and I will be your captain and your friend.
Pleaseth your grace for you to withdraw yourself? These rebels then will soon be put to foil.
Soldiers, take heart to you and follow me. It is our God that gives the victory! Drag this accursed villain through the streets to strike a terror to the rebels' hearts. London will give you power and arms, and God will strengthen you and daunt your foes. Fill Smithfield full of noise and joyful cries, and say aloud, God save our noble prince!